Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the CEO of U.S. Ski and Snowboard, Tiger Shaw. The new CEO of Park City Ski and Snowboard, Christy Hine, talking about her new position and where she hopes to take the organization. Later on, Ryan Anderson is the Community Program Coordinator with Utah Clean Energy. She has details about another bulk solar panel buy for Summit County that launches later this month. And finally, Basin Recreation District Director Brian Hatton has an update about some of the upcoming events and projects. Well, the annual U.S. Ski and Snowboards Congress was in town in May for 4 days of meetings and conversations and a studio with a look back at some of the business conducted as well as a look ahead at the coming season. I have the CEO of U.S. Ski and Snowboard, Tiger Shaw. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this happened, this annual Congress, they usually happen mid-May. What happens during these Congresses?
Well, it's really a roll-up of all the effort of volunteers and sport leaders across the country, all seven sports, and we have a couple hundred up to about 400 people get together and plan and set the rules and the schedules, and probably about 10,000 competitions in the United States each year that we sanction and oversee. That ends and culminates in a board meeting at the end of that week. And this was a big one because we had a change in leadership. Our chairman changed from Dexter Payne, who'd been serving us for 13 years, and now Kip Nelson takes over for the new era. And it's been fascinating, and it's so much fun to have so many people in town and to see our grassroots. I mean, the people that really make our sports happen in this country.
Yeah, so who gets invited to these then? I mean, who participates in them?
Well, it's very structured. So there's all kinds of committees and subcommittees, et cetera. All the meetings, most of them are open to anybody. And it's very procedural, but then it's also very social in the sense that people get a chance to really share ideas, thoughts, concepts, how to improve, how to change, how to alter our sports to become and keep them interesting to kids across the country.
Yeah. Good bump for our lodging world at that time of year, too, huh?
It's perfect timing. Yes, it's right in the shoulder season, and it works out really well.
Yeah. And since we last spoke, the International Olympic Committee has named Milan Cortina as the host city for the 2026 Winter Games. So what does that mean for Utah now?
Well, it means the round now is focusing on 2030. So it sounds like a long time away, but it's only going to be a couple of years before that starts to heat up again. The IOC keeps changing and improving, modernizing the bidding process. So we are definitely one of the candidates for 2030. So we would formally enter the bidding process in a couple of years. And a lot of people aren't aware that Italy now won it, where there's no chance for us being part of 26. So 30 is the next target.
Yeah. How involved is U.S. Ski and Snowboard in this?
Well, the exploratory committee is based in Salt Lake City, and we're not actually on it per se, although some people that are connected to our sports are certainly involved. But we're very close to the entire committee and constantly strategizing and working with them internationally, too, because in the end, it's often a vote of the members of the IOC, over 100 people. So it's very important to know those people and to stay in touch with them and make sure they're aware that this is the greatest place on earth to hold the Olympics.
Yeah. So what does it mean to U.S. Ski and Snowboard? Since you weren't in charge in 2002, I mean, but what do you see as a result of having kind of a home games?
Oh, it'd be enormous. I mean, essentially, the fact that Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation that owns and operates Utah Olympic Park is absolutely incredible, because to have these kind of venues, to have Olympic and world-class venues for athletes and kids in this region to grow up with is a huge leg up. We use many of them to train our teams and athletes from all over the country. And if we were to be bidding for the Olympics, then there'd be more support. Money would go back into the more money would go into the venues. I mean, it's incredible what they're doing just right here at Kimball Junction and Utah Olympic Park. And the impact is that we'll have faster, bigger, better athletes come 2030.
Yeah. Are you involved with Woodward at all? I know it's a private business, but it's eventually, I mean, that's the whole idea behind it.
That is, it makes a big difference, too. So all of the Woodwards, Powder Corp does an amazing job with all of those facilities, and a lot of our athletes learn there. As they do at all of our resort partners. So every single one of those elements is a critical part of our pipeline.
Yeah. We were just getting used to his British accent. Your spokesman, Tom Webb, has left. He headed back to family in Austin. So what now?
Well, we're going to use this as an opportunity to rethink the way we organize. So we've, you know, classically had a marketing and communications department. But what does that mean in today's world when social channels and the content on those channels is really far more important than the classic press release and official statements. And we need to reinvent ourselves. We need to provide more content to our athletes. We need to help our athletes grow their social followings, ours, because what's happening is resort partners, when we host these events, the digital reach is becoming far more important than the traditional media reach, meaning the TV coverage, the live broadcast. Fortunately, live sports are still critical through linear TV, basically over-the-air broadcast, still have a big audience. It's declining. But the digital channels are so critical in telling that story. And with our athletes and our followings, we reach millions of people quite easily. And if anything goes viral, then of course there's many, many more millions of people to be reached. Telling the story of our athletes, our resort partners, and how you become great in these sports and what their lives are like. I mean, it's expanded and grown, and it's fascinating.
So as opposed to kind of like a public relations person, you need really a social media manager or director.
We do. We need somebody who really lives and breathes in the post-millennial era. So for those younger part of the population that really, at best, they have a second screen when they're watching TV, and more likely they're not watching TV at all. So how to reach them, how to interact them, how to engage them through our athletes, helping our athletes. It's critical. And so this is a time to really invent that.
Yeah. So are you just kind of still defining what that job's going to look like, or are you actually out now posting the job?
We have posted the job. Mm-hmm. We're speaking to a number of candidates. And again, we're looking for somebody who's really grown up in that digital world and understands how to utilize Facebook and Google and YouTube and Instagram, you know, all the new things that are being invented every day, and how to reach the young audience.
Yeah. Let's see, summer training camps. You've been spending most of your time, it sounds like, in the Western United States.
Yeah, with so much snow this year, Mammoth, Mount Hood, and Squaw Valley have been exceptional. So our teams have been rotating through those venues all summer. They've been incredibly busy. And we'll continue to use those. And then later in July, early August, we go Southern Hemisphere, New Zealand, Australia, and then eventually to Chile, Argentina. And then eventually into Colorado for the early snow, and then across the country as the winter starts.
Yeah. And you still have the partnership then with Copper Mountain to get some of that early training?
We do. Copper Mountain is our Alpine Training Center early season. They usually get our venue there open November 1st. They're tremendous partners in that aspect, and we have a joint venture there in terms of improving that trail, snowmaking, fencing, et cetera. So we have one of the greatest downhill training venues in the world in the first 2 weeks of November, where nobody else does. And with them being above 10,000 feet, they can make snow early. And so we have 50, 60 people over there for pretty much the month of November.
Yeah. Well, we just heard from Ted Ligety on Friday saying that he's scaling back. He's just going to race giant slalom this season. How much say does the U.S. Ski and Snowboard have in decisions like that?
Well, we're always working really closely with Ted. I mean, our athletes are highly independent, especially the ones that have reached world-class gold medal levels. And they need us. We need them. And so we work in close partnership. Ted is at the training center training constantly, being a Park City resident. And we really support exactly what he wants to do this year. So he's going to focus on what he's great at and try to strike that, you know, work life or family life, sport life balance.
Yeah. And I know that had been a major focus for U.S. Ski and Snowboard, the athlete welfare. I mean, can you talk a little bit about some of the things you put into place to ensure that athletes train and compete safely?
Yes, we are doing a number of things there. And of course, Safe Sport, which everybody is well aware of now in terms of the Larry Nassar incident of a couple of years ago. And how do we protect and provide the best environment for athletes in all ways, physically, psychologically, socially. So that it's a major focus and a renewed focus by all sports bodies in the United States, including ours. So it's a big deal. We continue to refine it. And I think we are in a better place than we've ever been in history.
So all coaches then required to go through some of this Safe Sport training?
Yeah, so there's training modules that are now provided by the U.S. Center for Safe Sport. They're mandatory for all coaches. They're mandatory for all athletes. And the training and the background checking, the screening, all of those measures have gone to another level, including also our board of directors. And anybody who's in a position of, the best way to think of it is a position of power or in frequent contact with athletes must go through this training. And it has changed the level of awareness, the situational awareness of everybody, including parents, which again is very protective.
Yeah. So who do we have to look forward to see that Ted's winning ways are, you know, filled here?
Well, that's a great question. So our pipelines, our development pipelines are critical. And that's why the early season training is so important. That's why venues like here in Park City and Deer Valley are so important. Solitude, all of our partners around Utah and around the country. So our development teams continue to press. In newer sports, snowboard and freeski, you often see 14, 15, 16-year-olds come out of nowhere and become world-class winners. In alpine and cross-country, it's a much longer gestation period. So there's a number of athletes. There's no real standout per se, as there are a number of them that are in a position where they could mature and become like Ted and Michaela and Chloe and Maddie Maestro. I mean, you name it. There's a number of, and a Keegan Randall and a Jesse Diggins. So part of what really helps us in that development, too, is having events in the United States. Running these major events helps kids look and see and feel the events and say, hey, I want to do that, including a cross-country event, which we're World Cup we're holding in Minneapolis this winter, which has been a long time since we've done that in the United States.
Yeah, this is going to be like downtown or?
Just on the edge of town in Minneapolis in March. And we're hoping Jesse Diggins is on top of her game, but she has that entire city totally giddy, excited, and happy to be holding a world-class World Cup in Minneapolis.
Wow. Any other big event coming here to Utah?
Well, we always have our World Cups and Grand Prix, and they continue to rotate through Park City, Deer Valley, in this area, and of course our Colorado partners. Solitude has become more and more of a partner since the World Championships last year with Border Cross. So we have more venues growing. And of course, all the resorts, Snowbird, especially as a strong ski and snowboard club, but all of the resorts, Brighton and Alta and Snow Basin. I mean, they're really, this is an amazing mecca here in Utah to have so many great ski and snowboard clubs and so many great resorts. We continue to have athletes just come out of the woodwork here. And so we support our clubs as well as we can because they're the future of our success at the world-class level.
Yeah. And to ensure that the most promising athletes have the funding they need to succeed, you're busy then fundraising?
Exactly. So we're out on the road constantly fundraising. Philanthropy is about a third of our budget. Commercial partnerships are about a third. And we've been able to grow that so that we've been able to cover more and more of the athlete travel costs. So we put more than $1 million more into that this year, which has reduced travel costs for all of our top athletes, bringing it nearly to closure. We still have some more work to do, but we are in a position where we have not been for more than 15 years now in terms of funding our teams.
Wow. Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about?
Well, just appreciate the support of everybody in Park City and the families. Like I said, the ski and snowboard clubs are so strong and so prolific in this area. And just get out there, have fun, chase your passion, and hopefully we'll see you on the team.
Okay. Tiger Shaw, CEO of U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:24. Stay tuned. We'll be talking with the new CEO of Park City Ski and Snowboard, Christy Hine. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Park City Ski and Snowboard has hired a former board member, Christy Hine, to serve as its new CEO. She's been serving in that role in the last several months as interim director as the board conducted an extensive search. She joins me now in the studio. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Leslie. Good morning.
That was, so we talked, I think, to you in May after John Kanarowski had left. At what point did you decide that you wanted the job? Because you were just saying you were going to kind of like head up the search.
Right. So I did come aboard as an interim and pretty quickly started to engage with our sport directors to learn their programs and identify ways in which I could support them in the interim role. And, you know, sort of as the board of managers was in the middle of its search, I threw my hat in the ring. I was getting very good feedback and feeling pretty you know, feeling strongly that things were going pretty well. So I thought I might as well put my hat in the ring. And the board of managers made their decision a couple of weeks back. And I'm very, very honored and humbled to be coming on board to take the helm permanently.
Okay. So tell us about yourself, your background here.
So my background is as a lawyer. And you may wonder why that or how that could possibly translate into running a club. But I've spent much of my career herding corporate clients and lawyers on my team and nonprofit boards, or all three. And I've spent a lot of my career working with experts. So lawyers spend time working with experts, people who they could only dream of or imagine mastering what some of these experts do. And leveraging experts is really what my skill set is. So working with people who know what they're doing and helping leverage that and support that. And it turns out that that's a really good skill set for this role, working very closely with some of the best and bravest and most talented coaches and athletic directors and really helping realize their dreams and goals for the programs for these kids.
Yep. Attorneys make a lot more money, though, than nonprofit directors. That wasn't an issue for you?
Well,
I mean, you're doing this because you love it?
I'm really passionate about this club. I joined the board of managers because I'm really passionate. I'm also a parent, so I'm very invested in this club. And, you know, at some point in your life, money is not everything, right? I want to wake up every day and feel like I'm adding value, which I do at this club. I think it's a really important place for 800 kids in our community, you know, are part of our club. That's a real opportunity to get in front of kids and help mold, you know, and model great stuff for kids, help build grit and character. You know, I have very different metrics of success at our organization than Tiger does. I guess today's ski day, so I'm the second in line. You know, and podium is one metric by which we judge our organization. But there are lots of ways, including making, you know, Park City Ski and Snowboard a great place to work. This is a workplace as well. And so developing and help developing the careers of our coaches is something I'm really passionate about. And making sure that our kids are part of a really good culture, that they are making lifelong friends, that they're building the kinds of skills that are going to serve them as they become adults. I mean, we get to get in there and work with kids in a really special, important way through sport.
So how many sports directors are there? I mean, we got the Alpine, Nordic, Freestyle, Snowboard. What am I missing?
Free ski.
Free ski. Okay. All right. And so all of those directors then report to you? Is that kind of the flow here?
Yeah. So I think of us as a collaborative team. You know, we have a leadership team, which includes Gail Barber on the Alpine side. We have a new hire, actually. Katie Figgith will be joining us, our leadership administration team. She's coming over from US Ski and Snowboard, where she spent the last 5 years working with freestyle and free ski. And so the three of us really are helping shore up the programs and vision for these sport directors. So they report to me in a way, but really we're working very collaboratively at this point.
Yeah. And so any marching orders then from the board of directors?
Well, I think the board shares with me a strong vision that we create the best possible culture. So we are working very hard on strengthening club policies and processes and, you know, like realigning our vision around culture. We're also fundraising. You know, it would be very, very helpful. Obviously, our programs need to pay for themselves, but to put a fundraising wrapper around this club. We are hard at work fundraising for the Mountain Expansion. So that's something that the board, you know, cares very deeply about. That's going to be very, very helpful. That's the, you know, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. I know Colin was here last week talking about that. You know, we're a stakeholder and committed to raising $3 million for that project. That's going to give our Alpine and Mogul athletes, in particular, a really great new training venue. So we're very, very grateful to Colin and his team for bringing that to fruition. And coach development. So for me, and I know the board shares this vision, creating a workplace where coaches want to come and work is really important. So leadership training, things like that, where if our coaches are happy, the inevitable result, Leslie, will be that the kids on the hill are going to get better training and better and a better experience. Yeah. So those are the things we're working on.
Yeah. So back to the idea of kind of having to your marching orders to kind of corral these five different teams and really make them kind of a cohesive team. I mean, we've got individual organizations that have been doing it their way for so many years. How difficult is that going to be?
Well, it's blending a family. So integration takes strategy. It takes a lot of patience and it takes a ton of listening. But in the short few months that I've been there, you know, we meet weekly, a leadership team, these siblings, you know, who are coming together under one roof. And what I'm seeing is incredible support for one another. When there are many, many things that actually bridge all of those disciplines and all of those cultures. And the core reason that so many of these directors get up every day is to create an experience for athletes on the Hill where they're their best. They're at their best possible athletically, but where they also really want to model good sportsmanship. They want to create good stewards of the mountain. And there's absolute alignment around those things. So bringing cultures together, it's something that you have to have real strategy around. And I think it takes time. And it takes a certain amount of vision. So, you know, we're working together to think through ways, including a club certification process, where we can be, you know, talking through our culture and just coming back to our core values, our core mission, and everything from the policies and procedures in our handbook to, you know, the ways that we treat one another in our leadership meetings, just constantly coming back, every new hire, every document that goes out, really, really coming back to that core value and that and those core values and our core mission. So that's giving us a real, you know, roadmap for how we can come together as a family.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, U.S. Park City Ski and Snowboard was coming up with $3 million. How close are you to raising that?
So we have 1.6 total raised, and that's for both phase one and phase two commitments out of the $3 million that we've committed to raise. So we're doing a pretty good job. We've still got, you know, some of our commitments are over time. So, for example, somebody may give $100,000 to be spread out over 4 years. We still have about $300,000 we need to raise and have, you know, have brought into our accounts by October 31, 2019. But, you know, I'm starting to meet in the community people who want to pay it forward, you know, former ski racers, people who maybe don't even yet have kids in our programs, but really understand the value of having this level of training available in our community for our kids. So it's our families, you know, are certainly doing a big lift, but the community is starting to come together and realize this. We're having a groundbreaking. There will be a groundbreaking, I should say, on July 23rd in the morning. So Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation will be, I think, bringing a drone over and we can, you know, things are moving up there, which is really exciting. And we're hopeful that now that excavation is in full swing, that we will get people even more excited to be part of this amazing initiative.
Okay. So you officially started July 1 then, or?
I officially started July 1.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Anything else you want to tell our listeners?
Well, we have, as we always do, lots of things coming up. We have a golf event that is in support of our Alpine team that will be taking place at Park Meadows, and that over at the golf course, and that is September 13th. So please look out for that. You know, the Jan's Winter Welcome, all the things that happen in the fall are going to be coming upon us pretty soon. So we just want the community to be looking for Park City Ski and Snowboard. We're a community-based organization, and we're really, really happy and grateful to be looking after so many of the young athletes in our community.
Yeah, 800, I had no idea. That's
a lot of kids.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Christy.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
Christy Hind again, the newly named CEO of Park City Ski and Snowboard. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Utah Clean Energy is planning another rooftop bulk solar panel rooftop solar this month for Summit County residents. On the phone with details, I have Ryan Anderson. She's the Community Program Coordinator with Utah Clean Energy. Good morning to you, Ryan.
Good morning.
So this would be what, like the third or fourth offer for a solar panel bulk buy?
This is going to be the third offer in Summit County, but Utah Clean Energy has run fine of these programs in the past.
Yeah. So how does it work?
So basically, we put together a community steering committee that went through a very rigorous vetting process so that we could really simplify the solar process. We recognize that solar can be really complicated and expensive, so we wanted to make it as simple and affordable as possible by doing this bulk purchase model, so there's going to be a discount, and the vetting process makes sure that we have a trusted installer for the community.
Okay, so who did you use? Who are you going to use for the installation?
So we have yet to announce, but we will be announcing that at our launch party, which will be July 30th.
Okay, so is it still a deal to buy rooftop solar?
Yeah. So there's been a lot of confusion because of the way that Rocky Mountain Power's net metering program has changed, but there are still incentives available. So we actually think this is the best time to go solar. So in addition to the discount from the installer, which we're anticipating is going to run about 20 to 30% off the ticket price, there's going to be a 30% federal tax credit that steps down to 26% at the end of this year. So just by installing before December 31st, you get an extra 4% off than you would get if you install next year. There's also a state tax credit that's capped at $1,600, and that steps down at the end of 2020. And then the way that Rocky Mountain Power compensates the customers who generate excess electricity, so in the summer, you're anticipated that you're going to generate a lot more than you use, and in the winter, it's going to be the opposite. And right now, there's a month-to-month rollover, so you're able to use the electricity you generate on a 9 cents per kilowatt hour basis, which is about the average price of electricity here in Utah. But that's going to change next year, and we're not confident that it's going to get better.
Okay. So it's not going to roll over? Is that how people aren't going to be able to kind of bank their production?
So that's still to be determined. We're not sure what that's going to look like yet.
Okay. So that, and you're referring, I think, to that agreement that was made in 2017 with Rocky Mountain Power and the Public Service Commission?
Yeah. So right now we're in what's called the transition program, and that's the transition until they figure out what the next program is going to be starting next year.
Anyone who had, though, put on solar panels prior to that are grandfathered forever?
Yes. Not forever. I think it goes until about 2032-ish. And the same is going to be true for people who install before the transition program ends.
Okay. So when do you announce the installer?
So the installer is going to be formally announced at the launch party, which is July 30th from 6 to 8 at Alpine Distilling.
Okay. And what's going to happen then?
So basically the way that the program works is you take a solar eligibility survey where you answer questions about your roof, and then based off of your eligibility, the contractor or the installer will reach out to you to schedule a site visit. And at that site visit, they'll be talking about energy efficiency as well as solar. We wanted to make sure that the installer wouldn't just try to sell you as much solar as possible. So instead, they'll talk about ways that you can improve your energy use. And then they'll take a look at your roof, and if you're a good fit, they'll send you a quote. And then you will sign the contract directly with the installer by the end of 2019.
And then it would be installed starting next spring or whenever they can get on the roof?
Yeah, so installations will start as soon as people start enrolling and signing contracts. So it'll be going on a rolling basis, and then depending on weather, we might have to finish up some installations in the spring.
Okay. How many signed contracts do you need to make this a better deal for people?
So we have no minimum and no maximum. In the past, the last time we ran the program, we had about 170 over the last two times we ran this program. So that is really great. We're trying to hit that number in total this year. The first time we ran the program, there were about 65 installations, and that actually tripled the number of installations that had happened in Summit County total up until that time in 2013.
Let's talk a little about this return on investment. That's what everybody wants to know. Oh, what's my return on investment? And I guess I just like to, because it was something that I always thought was kind of funny. I mean, people will go out and spend $50,000 on a car, and you know, nobody asks them, what's your return on investment? I mean, people buy that car or that expensive mountain bike because that's the car or the bike they want. But why is it that solar panels are different?
Yeah, so solar panels, I think a lot of it is because it's not seen as a necessity. So people want to know how they're going to save money on their utility bills and how this is going to benefit them, not just the environment. But you can really get a system to pay for itself in under 7 years, depending on the size of your system and how high your utility bills are now.
Right. And I guess when you compare that to a bike, I mean, does a bike pay for itself in 7 years or a car? I mean, not really, right? I mean, it's just because it's a personal choice. You spend your money how you want to spend your money.
Exactly. And this will actually pay you in the long run.
Yeah. What is it? What is an average? I don't even know if there is such a thing, but an average system for somebody, you know, with a family of four. Do you have any idea what something like that would cost?
Yeah. So the average system is probably going to be 6 kilowatts to use to cover all of your energy use. So that's 100%. And that can get you probably about under $15,000 with our program. And then that's before all of the tax credits and other incentives kick in.
Okay. Again, this meeting is happening. You mentioned July 30th at Alpine Distillery. Do you have an address for that?
I do not off the top of my head. Let me check real quick.
Well, that's okay. And what time is it going to happen?
It's going to happen from 6 to 8.
Okay. PM. Okay. Well, we'll make sure that we get that address then in the news copy that we put out. Anything else, Ryan, that you think people ought to know?
Other things is we have a website, scpwsolar.org, and we're also on Facebook, SCPW Works, and we're going to be having workshops throughout the summer that are a little bit more in-depth than the launch party is going to be, so we're going to have solar one-on-one. You're going to be able to meet the contractor, and we'll have energy experts from Utah Clean Energy there to answer any questions.
Okay. Ryan Anderson is the Community Program Coordinator with Utah Clean Energy. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now in the studio from Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, I have Director Brian Hatton. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, let's start. You got a bunch of events coming up. Let's talk a little bit about those.
Yeah, we have a busy Saturday. Our teams definitely has their hands full, but it should be a fun Saturday. We start out with a Mountain Miles Pine Beer Run starting at 7 a.m. at the Fieldhouse. I think it's a 5-miler that runs up into the PRI property from the Fieldhouse just below the UOP and back down. And then we have our Basin's Backyard Bash, which consists of a cornhole tournament, a pickle fest, and a Son of a Beach volleyball tournament. So Willow Creek Park will be a busy one. And then in the evening, we have a movie at Ecker Hill. It's the movie's name, and I apologize if I say this wrong. It's a Spanish movie, Para Picar. They'll have that at Ecker Hill. It's a short animated and live-action film that kind of focuses on boys and girls in Central and South America that just kind of take chances and make friends. And it was a movie from the Children's Film Festival in Seattle.
Okay, so that's going to be where?
At Ecker Hill.
Oh, in the auditorium?
No, outside.
Outside.
Yep, so one of our outdoor ones.
The fields.
Yep, so we're trying to include the neighbors all around, and hopefully people will come from all over to come check it out.
Okay. Again, that's all Saturday. Friday, you've got the blood drive happening there at the Fieldhouse.
Yes. Yep. And just, I mean, all that information can be found at our website, basinrecreation.org.
Okay. You also have organized summer camp, and that hits its halfway point here. How's that going?
Our camps have been busier than ever. Our teams have done some restructuring of some of our traditional camps and continued some of our more popular travel camps. But we have definitely had an influx of people, and it's been great. I mean, the kids seem to have smiles on their faces and having fun.
Are they a sellout? I mean, could you take more kids? Or
right, they'd have to check the website. And I mean, I know some weeks, just depending on what's going on in town or if it's a lot of people traveling, I would check the website and just make sure there are spots available. I think we had about 60 kids in one of our camps. So it's a busy, that's our day camp, but we have definitely enough staff to handle it. And they the kids seem to be enjoying it.
Okay. You've got some court resurfacing happening there at Willow Creek Park. What's happening there?
We're going to resurface the two tennis and pickleball courts and our basketball court. So we have the last week of July, so July 29th, we're supposed to start resurfacing. They'll do it a week at a time. So one court, what we're going to do is the court closest to the open space will be strictly tennis. So they're going to reline those and make those strictly tennis. The courts that are closer to the park buildings will be pickleball courts. And so we're going to put 8 pickleball courts on that one. And then our basketball court will be resurfaced as well. So about a week each. It's not a total shutdown of every facility, but it'll just be a little hitch in our programming as if you're going over to the park to play.
Okay, right now they're all tennis courts?
We have 4 tennis courts with 4 of those courts have overlaid, or 2 of those courts have overlaid pickleball lines right now.
And so when all is said and done, it'll be 2 tennis and 2 pickleball?
It'll be 2 tennis and 8 pickleball.
Okay.
So we were able to, the courts that are closer to the park area, they're a little bit bigger, so we were able to put 8 pickleball courts there.
Okay. Well, we have heard about the vandalism happening to the pickleball courts. What's going on there?
Unfortunately, sometimes if the nets are left out there in the park area, and sometimes they're left on the courts with nobody around, and I don't really know what happened. I mean, I saw that letter to the editor, and not sure of time of day when it happened. I mean, we feel fortunate that this is the first that's happened because we've had them out there for 2 years that we know of, that this is the first incident that nets have been dismantled and kind of spread out throughout the park. We'll continue to keep an eye on it, but it's just an unfortunate thing that happens in our park sometimes. We have vandalism throughout our parks, not just in that area. So it's just unfortunately part of our world that we deal with.
Yeah. Well, and we've certainly over the years have heard about the friction between the tennis players and the pickleball players. I mean, we got to make room for everyone, huh?
Yeah. We got to all play in the same sandbox. And I mean, I don't think it was the tennis players that did it, regardless of what the letter said. But it just was an unfortunate incident. And hopefully we can mitigate those from happening in the future.
Okay, let's see. You also have the results from the community survey you did. What did that tell you?
A lot of the survey, we came back with the same, very similar results that we had in the 2012 survey. Open space and trails continue to lead the charge as far as what people want. And, I mean, what we were pleased with is the of the parks and facilities, the community showed about over a 90% approval rating for what we're doing. So it seems like we're in the right direction for what the community is looking for. And then we asked, what improvements could we make in facilities, or what improvements could we make in programming? And the biggest response was more. They just want more. So, I mean, if we can figure that out, as well as funding and those types of things, it'll all come into play.
Yeah, you didn't mention ice.
Yes, ice comments didn't come back strong, but we know that that's still of interest to the community. We're hoping that development in Black Rock comes to fruition, and we're able to work with them to help alleviate some of the pressures at the rink.
Well, it's under construction now, isn't it?
The hotel is under construction. They last I saw, the projected rink would be 2021. So there's still going to be some challenging hours for figure skaters and curlers and hockey players over at our current rink.
Okay. So do you have the results posted somewhere? People can have a look?
We haven't posted them up yet. We're going to meet with our board at a board retreat on July 31st. And the consultant was just doing some tweaking. They met with our team and the city's team. And just we were able to ask some questions. And they were getting the results that we wanted to put together, just so it was what we felt was easier for the community to understand.
Okay, finally wanted to ask you any updates with regards to the future of Rob's Trail, because we had to close that this winter due to some, I guess, avalanche safety concerns?
Yeah, there's some areas where it is an avalanche zone, and we did meet with Vail and Park City. And right now, they're looking at it. It doesn't look like this winter will be an open access area for us again. We just want to abide by where we hold our easements and following the rules of what was written. So we just want to make sure that we, as much as we can, the community just adhere to those when they are closed, if we can follow those rules.
Yeah. Is there some way to reroute the trail, though?
And we are looking at that. Mm. There's a few different property owners in there that we have to work with to get the easements. So it's not as easy as what we had hoped when we first looked at it. But our trails team is out there looking. I know Sun Peak is one area who I think they would be supportive of it. We just have to figure out the route and staffing to get that project done.
Yeah. I mean, and we had heard that, you know, regardless of the closure, people were still using it anyway. I mean, is that could it be enforced? And what, trespassing?
Yeah. Society? Yeah. Ultimately, that could be. I mean, I think it's similar to what you see in the ski resorts where people drop back and, I mean, go under the lines. I mean, unfortunately, it's a risk they take as long as it's posted well. So hopefully nothing happens there and we don't have any issues. But yeah, we will still have it posted up there as far as closed in the winter.
Okay. Anything else, Brian, you want to mention?
No, that's if Saturday, if you want some fun things to do, go check out our website and you can run, you can play cornhole, pickleball, volleyball, or just go watch a movie. So.
Okay. Brian Hatton is the director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. Thanks.
Thank you.